Hello, and happy holiday season to each of you. Welcome to our program on careers. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader for Send Sounds. The first article that I would like to read for you today is from the Wall Street Journal, the 25th of November, How Students Can Artificially Intelligence Proof Their Careers. Artificial intelligence is going to eliminate a lot of jobs in the future. It's possible to reduce the risk that it will be yours. This article was written for the journal by James R. Haggerty. The current generation of college students is facing a challenge that those who came before never had to worry about. They'll be competing with AI for jobs. So what could they do to get ready? After all, artificial intelligence is likely to eliminate at least some jobs that formerly served as first rungs on career ladders. We have to accept and embrace the idea that, in fact, with AI, we are going to have jobs that are going to be eliminated and jobs that are going to be created. And we don't know which ones, says Joseph E. Aoun, who is president of Northeastern University. That uncertainty leaves today's college students struggling to prepare for a workplace that is changing faster than ever. We asked a range of career counselors and employers how they would suggest that students of today artificially intelligence-proof their careers. One consensus, it's important to master skills not easily matched by machines, such as human-style communications and the ability to understand and work with smoothly with people who have different perspectives and personalities. In many ways, the human skills are going to be more fundamental than they are now as machines take over some of the routine tasks, Aoun says. A survey of 255 employers by the National Association of Colleges and Employers last year found that the three top competencies they sought in job candidates were communication, teamwork, and critical thinking. Communication and teamwork rely on emotional intelligence, or EQ. AI has probably won the IQ battle, says Thomas Chamorro Premazic, who is Chief Innovation Officer at Manpower Group and Professor of Business Psychology at Columbia University. But the EQ battle is up for grabs. Of course, that does not mean that students shouldn't master AI. Skill in using AI as a productivity-enhancing tool can give them an edge over older workers who have not yet mastered ChatGPT and other artificial intelligence programs. But knowing how to use AI efficiently is not enough. Here are some suggestions from the experts on how students, or really anybody else, can reduce the risk that they will eventually be replaced by artificial intelligence. First, cultivate your ability to work with other people, including jerks. AI can write computer code, improve grammar, and solve math problems. But so far, it lacks the ability to mediate squabbles among colleagues, charm potential clients over cocktails, or soothe angry customers. So developing those skills may be one of a job applicant's best selling points. Anything that requires talking and cooperating with strangers is helpful. This includes volunteering in a nursing home or an after-school youth program, or leading an on-campus club or sport. Jobs often require dealing directly with lots of other people, including jerks, are an educational opportunity. If you're a waiter, you will understand human beings better, said Chamorro Premazic. Go wide and avoid hyper-specialization. Focusing too heavily on one type of expertise could be a mistake today if, as expected, AI eliminates lots of jobs in some specialties. It isn't a risk only for technology fields such as computer science. Other fields such as accounting and finance are also being transformed today by AI. Instead, experts recommend having a portfolio of skills. If you have one skill, you compete with the masses that have that same one skill, says Anna Isaki Smith, who is author of Make College Your Superpower. In contrast, she says, should you stack on another skill, you become qualified for a wider range of opportunities. This could mean adding a minor or two to a major or going on for a double major. It also could involve a strategic selection of electives. Dee Raja, who is chief executive of CEI, a Pittsburgh information technology consultancy firm, says he has increasingly looking for jobs candidates who have both technical skills and a grounding in business, enabling them to understand clients' needs. An MBA stacked atop a computer science degree is one good strategy, he says. Though a range of skills and knowledge is an advantage today, it's still important to develop deep expertise in at least one or two areas. AI has disrupted superficial expertise, Chamorro Prumezic says. In other words, you have to know more than generative AI programs can spit out in a minute or two. Show you can organize a big project and get it done. If AI will do at least some of the grunt work, people will still be needed to devise strategies and carry out complicated projects. Machines do pieces of work, but we still need big picture humans to put it all together, says John Behrens, who is director of the Technology and Digital Studies program at the University of Notre Dame. To help students learn how to manage complexity, many universities now require them to complete a capstone project before graduation. These can include primary research, ambitious artworks, or community service projects. Vanderbilt University calls such projects immersion. For his Vanderbilt project, Logan Glazier is converting an old school bus, once consigned to the junkyard, into an RV with solar panels mounted on the roof to power his refrigerator and other appliances. He expects to finish the project within a few months before graduating in the spring with a degree in civil engineering. Glazier had to sell his idea to university administrators first, persuade them to give him space to work on the bus, develop a plan, and find materials. He watched dozens of YouTube videos and consulted with Vanderbilt professors. He recalls the reaction he got from people at the engineering consultancy firm HNTB, where they heard about the project. How? Wow, that's really cool. He got an HNTB internship in 2023, and he recently accepted a full-time job at the firm starting in May after his graduation. Then you need to be open to new experiences. As artificial intelligence and other technological changes make career paths less predictable, adaptability will be an advantage. We don't know yet what the world is going to be like in 5 years or 10 years, says Behrens. Students can develop their adaptability by seeking out new experiences such as studying abroad or taking unconventional courses. At Carnegie Mellon University, renowned for computer science and robotics, one of the most popular electives is acting for non-majors, offered by the Pittsburgh School's drama department. Students have long taken the course, but now demand has soared as students see it as a plus in the job market, forcing them to share their inhibitions and engage with other people in unscripted ways. This year, to accommodate demand, CMU quadrupled the capacity of the course. It's exhilarating, says Emily Ma, who is a math major. Acting forces you to step outside of your comfort zone. That's particularly important for a generation of young people who were isolated during the COVID-19 pandemic and spent far more time staring at screens than they did engaging directly with other people. Be a moderate misfit. Among all of the changes AI is bringing, companies want fresh thinking. So one route to success is to be a moderate misfit, unhappy with the status quo and ready to innovate, says Chamorro Premusic. By moderate, he means that you fit in well enough and work well with others, but are not so bland and risk averse as to lose the desire for change and progress. Chamorro Premusic advises young people not to seek employers that fit perfectly with their values, but rather to look for places that they like, but which they also dream of transforming and improving. AI is like a B+ student and can tell you what the average person would say, says Matthew Raskoff, Vice Provost for Digital Education at Stanford University. A+ work, he says, is the product of an individual brain with a distinctive voice, and so he urges students to develop their own voices and identities. The more you outsource to AI, he says, the less you are developing that muscle. The next article that I would like to read for you is from the Wall Street Journal, the 21st of November. The article's title is Federal Employees Face Fight Over Remote Work. This article was written for the Journal by John McCormick and Tu-Ping Chen. The nation's largest workforce could soon be ordered back to the office full-time. President-elect Donald Trump has vowed to slash government bureaucracy and appointed uber-wealthy entrepreneurs Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy to lead the efficiency effort. The two men have already targeted remote workers, saying that requiring federal employees back to the office 5 days each week would result in a welcome wave of voluntary terminations. If federal employees don't want to show up, American taxpayers shouldn't pay them for the COVID-era privilege of staying home, Musk and Ramaswamy wrote in a Wall Street Journal opinion piece published Wednesday. Ending remote work is being considered a potential early action item for the new administration shortly after the January 20th inauguration, said a person working closely with the effort. Still, that outcome is far from certain. Of the 2.3 million civilian federal workers, nearly 30% of whom are veterans, more than half already work in person because of the nature of their jobs, such as food safety inspectors and healthcare workers, according to a 2024 Office of Management and Budget report. The rest, who are eligible to work remotely some of the time, perform an average of 61% of their hours in the workplace. In U.S. Census Bureau surveys, federal and private sector employees work roughly the same amount of time in person versus remotely. The newly proposed Department of Government Efficiency, the advisory group Musk and Ramaswamy have been appointed to lead, does not necessarily have direct power to issue such a mandate. Federal worker union leaders said changes to working conditions should be negotiated in collective bargaining. Unions are gearing up now to counter such efforts. The National Federation of Federal Employees, which represents 110,000 federal workers, has been consulting with its legal team and the union's national president, who is Randy Irwin. It also plans to lobby members of Congress and is holding town halls with members concerned about full-time office mandates and job cuts. We're rallying them and getting prepared for a really, really big fight, he said. Ramaswamy, a biotech company founder, and Musk, who spent more than $100 million to help send Trump back to the White House, are both close to the president-elect. Their words would carry weight with cabinet picks. Trump's transition team did not respond to an email seeking comment on this. In an interview with a journal last week, Ramaswamy suggested federal workers should be worried about their jobs. We'll want to be reasonable, as compassionate as we can, at the level of individuals, he said. But at the level of permanency, downsizing the scope of the bureaucracy, that is obviously going to have some consequences. Ramaswamy predicted in a post on X that up to 25% of civil servants would leave in the event of a full-time office mandate. Though some companies have recently ordered staff back to offices full-time, most U.S. companies offer some flexibility on where employees work, according to data from Flex Index, which tracks the policies of more than 6,300 companies. One exception is Musk's business empire. He scrapped remote work at Tesla, SpaceX, and X post-pandemic, calling it morally wrong. Roivant Sciences, the biotech firm Ramaswamy founded, mostly has in-person or hybrid workers. Ramaswamy has not been involved with the company since he left its board in early 2023, although he does remain a shareholder. A five-day office mandate would roil some federal departments more than others. At the State Department, staffers eligible to work remotely already spend about 80% of their working hours on site, according to the OMB report. At the Defense Department, the average is 64%. Workers at the Departments of Education, Treasury, and Housing and Urban Development perform between 36% and 39% of their hours at a work site. The next article that I would like to read for you today is from the November 19th issue of the Wall Street Journal. The title of this article is Lessons from 11 Years of Work-Life Balance. After hundreds of stories, our columnist signs off, offering final thoughts on raises, setbacks, family, and dream jobs. Rachel Feinzig wrote this article for the journal. Spend 11 years obsessed with work, and you pick up a tip or two. I started writing about careers and leadership for the Wall Street Journal back in 2013. Commuting was a thing you did every day. The effects of the 2008 recession still colored much about corporate life. Skinny jeans were in, though you could probably only wear them to work on Fridays. I was 28 years old and newly married at the time. Every morning I walked from my tiny apartment to the newspaper's Midtown headquarters, feeling equal parts anxious and exhilarated as I changed into heels at my desk. I observed the working moms in my new division who appeared to have figured out how to have it all. I wondered how things might go for me. Hundreds of stories, four moves, two kids, and one promotion later. I'm saying goodbye to my beloved work and life column. It's been a privilege to spend my days like this, parsing research, probing experts, and chatting with hundreds of workers who have shared their stories with me. It has changed my life. And here's the best of what I've learned. First, get what you want. You can ask for almost anything, it turns out. You might not get it, but if you do it right, it shouldn't hurt you. Always have what William Urey, co-author of the Negotiation Bible, Getting to Yes, calls a BATNA, B-A-T-N-A, or Best Alternative to a Negotiated Agreement. In other words, make yourself a solid plan B before you make your ask. If their answer is no, will you walk, focus on another project, or start a side hustle? How good is the plan B compared to what you're asking for? The more alluring the alternative, the more power you will have in the negotiation. And think creatively. Do you need a raise or do you need a more flexible schedule or an unpaid sabbatical? You're not making demands, you're starting a conversation. Speaking of your raise, share your salary with your peers, ask what they make, subtly, carefully, and artfully. Sure, it can be awkward, not to mention risky. You may get a hard no. It's still the best weapon, though, I know, to shed light on corporate pay processes and make what you deserve and be that guy. The colleagues I've always envied most were the ones who projected a natural confidence and breeziness while killing it at their jobs. They probably won't respond to your non-urgent email until tomorrow. They're busy doing the stuff that really matters. Less harried, they'll project a certain optimism and make work look fun. I believe in hard work, but I do not think that you get anywhere from simply grinding it out. Brag well about yourself and about others. Test out some tenets of slow productivity, such as alternating intense work periods with quiet recharge time, and ditch the insecurity, the voice in your head that says you're a fake. Companies run on insecure overachievers who prioritize work above all else. Often it only ends up serving the company. And there are the bad days. I wish someone had told me around the time I was getting rejected from the first big journalism job I applied for that failure is part of having a career. An interesting one anyway. Even the wonder kids among us, the people who found the elevator that goes straight to the top, fail sometimes. Then they move on. If you're marching neatly along a path, only hearing yes, you're probably not aiming high enough. Or the crash is coming. There are no guarantees in most industries anymore. Embrace a big life. Maybe it's because I spent years desperately trying to become a working parent, but I think having two things in your life that you love is kind of great. It's like spreading your existential eggs in some way. Yael Schoenbrew, who is a clinical psychologist, told me for a column on work-life collisions. I don't mean to suggest that balancing children and a job is not hard, or that there aren't things that companies and governments could do to make it better. But it can bring such perspective and depth into your life, lowering the stakes on any one thing. A disastrous meeting at work feels less like the end of the world when you get home to a smiling child. And a screaming toddler feels less like the end of the world when you nail the work meeting. The same goes for leaning into a beloved hobby or building personal relationships of all kinds. On my most stressful working parent days, I think about one of my worst days on the job, period, when I reported a piece about on-site daycares while going through a failed in vitro fertilization cycle. I wanted so much to join the moms and dads I was interviewing, child care struggles and all. I finally got my chance, and it has been a gift. And ease in. If you take a parental leave or a sabbatical or even a long vacation, come back to work on a Wednesday. You can get through 3 days. How much to say? So, should you bring your whole self to work? Probably not. Then again, I cried a lot about that aforementioned IVF cycle at the office. If you have wonderful colleagues and bosses, sharing is fine. If you don't, think carefully about opening up about your infertility or your mental health struggles. Bias lingers in many workplaces. When doling out advice, I tried hard to balance what I wish workplaces looked like with the reality we actually do live in. I often think about something that Jeffrey Pfeffer, a professor at Stanford University's business school, told me about asserting your power at work, especially if you're a woman or a person of color. Of course you'll piss people off, he said. That doesn't mean it's not worth it. I hope readers push the margins when they can to make things better for all of us. And finally, when to take a leap. Writing an advice column has taught me that there's often no magic answer, just excellent ways of thinking about a problem. When I was offered this job in June of 2020, head spinning from the combination of a one-year-old and a two-year-old and a pandemic, I almost turned it down. "Tell me what to do," I begged my husband, my best friend, and anyone who would listen. One mentor was most helpful. "Picture your dream job," she told me. "Does this position get you closer or farther from it?" It got me very close. For years, writing this column was a dream come true. But goals are not static. Now I dream of writing books and being more present for my family. I'm excited and scared to get the chance to try. Your dream of the moment might be a new title, a four-day work week, or a restorative break. I hope these last 4 years of columns will help you get there. When you do, I want to hear all about it. And then next is from the Work Friend column, which appears in the New York Times, this written by Roxanne Gay. The question posed is, working with humans, the bot says no. Last year, I produced work for a freelance client that was so successful that they publicly held it up as an example of the work they expected from other freelancers alongside some incredibly accomplished people. When a full-time job opportunity during the same work at said organization presented itself, I applied. I submitted my resume, references, and a thoughtful cover letter outlining what I had already achieved and what more I could offer. I pointed out how, between our perspectives, my younger colleague and I could cover more ground. A few weeks later, I received a bot rejection saying that they decided to move forward with other candidates whose skill sets are more closely aligned with the needs. I found this dismissive rejection without the opportunity to interview demoralizing. Do I have any recourse? Is there any benefit to asking human resources for clarity? This whole experience has been challenging for me. My colleague is aware of the situation and has not addressed it, but does offer me work. I don't want to burn the bridge before I start anything. The answer is, when you're on the job market, nothing too is guaranteed. You may be eminently qualified for a position, have a relationship with the company, or any number of other factors, and still not receive even an interview. And worse yet, you may never truly know why you weren't chosen. But you can certainly reach out to human resources. You're seeking an explanation that will not satisfy you, no matter what it is. You have to find a way to move forward. Maybe you stop working with the client. Maybe you apply for other full-time positions elsewhere. Maybe you broach the subject with your colleague tactfully so that you can at least get some clarity and information that may help you on moving forward. However you move on from here, you know one thing for certain, you produce excellent work and will continue doing so. This is all we have time for on our program on careers today. I hope that you've enjoyed listening in and will enjoy the rest of your day. Also, enjoy the holiday season. And thank you for listening in. I'm Irene Lubin, and I'm a volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona.